From the KTO newsroom, I'm Jamie Deep. Thanks for tuning in. The state Senate will consider a bill meant to increase educational options for Alaska students who are deaf or hard of hearing. It's called the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Children's Bill of Rights, and it passed the state house unanimously last week. Jamie Allard, a Republican from Eagle River, sponsored the legislation. She says it would require Alaska schools to present families with information on all possible methods of communication for their deaf and hard of hearing children. Here she is making the case for the bill on the House floor.
It establishes consistency in information provided to parents by the school district, allows parents to choose the best method of communication for their child, and requires the school district to provide services using the parents' chosen method of communication.
That means students would have access to information about and support for American Sign Language, adapting to spoken English, and total communication, which can combine both. Allard, who is hard of hearing herself, says that will allow kids full access to educational opportunities. How deaf and hard of hearing people communicate is controversial. Some say American Sign Language better supports deaf cultural identity and language development. Others argue adapting to spoken language helps people integrate more fully into hearing society. Olivia Yancey is executive director of the statewide Special Education Service Agency. She says the intention of the bill is great and it emphasizes providing neutral, unbiased information. But she says it's missing a key population, kids who aren't yet school age.
From birth to three, we have these critical language learning years. And if a parent is digging for information and doesn't have this push for having a comprehensive, neutral, and biased information about communication modes, they're going to be digging for a while, and they really need to have that information earlier.
Many other states have deaf and hard of hearing bills of rights, and some do address support for kids three and under. Staff from Alaska Marine Lines and the Alaska Marine Highway System discussed EV shipping safety during a panel held by Renewable Juno, an advocacy nonprofit, yesterday. AML stopped shipping electric vehicles to Alaska last year due to the fire risk posed by lithium-ion batteries. The decision came after another company's cargo ship carrying hundreds of hybrid and electric vehicles caught fire in the open ocean, burned for days, and sank. AML has said the company would reassess its policy as industry standards improve. During the panel, AML President Don Reed said he wished there were reliable safety ratings for the various lithium-ion batteries on the market.
Every manufacturer you talk to wants to tell you that their product is perfectly safe, and, you know, who are you supposed to believe?
Reed says he wants AML to be able to ship all vehicles, but he spent a lot of time researching the issue and speaking with consultants and said shipping EVs that plug in would be too risky for the company at this point.
What I need is the confidence that the thing's not going to catch on fire on the barge. That's really what it comes down to.
AML was the last barge company to pull EVs off its Alaska shipping routes. Now EVs can be shipped two ways, on the road system, which doesn't extend to much of Southeast, or two at a time on ferries, creating a bottleneck for consumers. Craig Tornga, Marine Director for the Alaska Marine Highway System, said people who want to ship an EV on the ferry from Bellingham might wait around 3 months. To improve safety procedures, the agency hired a vessel firefighter with expertise in EV battery fires. Tornga says those safety procedures include recommending EV drivers not charge the battery too much before boarding, placing EVs in areas of the ship easy for firefighters to access, and repeatedly inspecting the vehicles while in transit.
We have thermal infrared handheld cameras. We go around and we, every hour on the hour, we shoot the battery to see what the temperature is and make sure we don't see any changes.
In addition to the handheld cameras, the ferry operators plan to install other thermal cameras and purchased high-power sprayers called Turtle Fire Systems that can flood a battery box to cool it down. And as a disclaimer, the panel was hosted at KTOO, with staff outside the news department contracted to produce the event. And the Alaska Fellows Program aims to cultivate Alaska's next generation of leaders. It places young professionals in communities across the state, where they work alongside nonprofit and public sector organizations while receiving mentorship, housing, and a modest living stipend. Enter Akanksha Basil. KTOO's Mike Lane sat down with Basil to learn about her efforts to strengthen and streamline disaster response coordination in Juneau.
You're here in Juneau working with United Way to establish a VOAD. Mm-hmm. So what is a VOAD and why does it matter in Alaska?
Yeah, so VOAD, Volunteer Organizations Assisting or Active in Disaster, is a group of community organizations from around a particular place that mobilizes in cases or events of disaster to coordinate resources where they need to be going, depending on the type of disaster and the people affected. So, you know, who's going to come in for feeding and who's going to come in for shelter, who's taking care of, you know, debris removal and construction, and who's also looking at kind of the long-term recovery part of this.
How would a coordinated VOAD change the way Juneau responds to disasters compared to how things have been working up until this point?
Sure. So a coordinated VOAD would streamline the process a little bit more. So currently, what's really great about Juneau and Southeast is that we already have an established network of people that communicate and coordinate when disasters strike. But it's more on an informal basis. But we'd like to make this process a little bit more structured and coordinated so that we know exactly who to call in case of emergency, no matter what the prior existing connection would be, especially because organizations are changing and there's turnover and disasters involve, you know, different responses and different needs. So I think that having a coordinated VOAD in Juneau would make the process a lot more streamlined, stress-free, and fungible and adaptable in case that was needed.
Okay. And so far, what kind of organizations are currently involved or being recruited?
Yeah. So we have organizations from all kind of sectors and who take care of all different things, anyone from Juneau Animal Rescue to the Food Bank and the Salvation Army and the Red Cross, various churches around town that already have really wonderful established feeding programs and mutual aid networks. And I think that this is a process that we're really trying to make as public as possible. So we're really encouraging public participation, public leadership. We want to get the word out so that people know where to find us and they know how to get involved. So any organization, anyone's welcome, because this is a public process.
So are there resources or support that are still needed to fully launch this particular VOAD?
Yes, for sure. So right now we are a small but mighty network. We still have quite a few organizations that we need to get in touch with, reach out to, and we're trying to get collaboration from a broader set of the population. So I think that that's a major next step to look at.
From the ground up, how long does it take to build a functioning VOAD?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say quite some time, right? It's definitely a process that we're learning about every day. It's changing every day. We're still really in the initial processes of figuring out how to do this. A lot of my first couple months was researching the community, getting to know people here, making connections, figuring out what past disaster responses have looked like. And we're just about kind of starting to structure structured committees, create internal policy. So yeah, and you know, actually wanted to mention that we've also held a couple meetings so far that have been really productive, have spurred some really great conversations. So we're really happy about that too.
And how can people get involved?
Yes, please. I would love for people to reach out to United Way. I've got an email address, voad@unitedwayseak.org. It's voad@unitedwayseak.org. I'd welcome anyone to reach out and share your thoughts, share your opinions, inquire more about the process, because we'd love more people to be involved in this process.
Akanksha Basil, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
That was Mike Lane talking to Alaska fellow Akanksha Basil about her efforts to establish a VOAD in Juneau, also known as Voluntary Organizations Active in Disasters. To learn more or get involved, email voad@unitedwayseak.org. And there will now be more time to speak out on the future of the Federal Subsistence Board, which has authority over hunting and fishing on federal public lands. The U.S. Interior Department has extended the deadline for public comment until March 30th. The announcement comes as hundreds of Alaskans rushed to meet the original February 13th deadline to weigh in on the U.S. Interior Department's review of its subsistence management program. A Safari Club international petition is at the heart of the debate. The National Sport Hunting and Fishing Group calls for changes, which rural subsistence users say threatens their legal right to hunt, fish, and provide for their families. As of Monday, an Interior Department spokesman said it had received more than 430 comments, with more expected throughout this week. When the Interior Department gave notice of its review on December 15th, Native organizations, including the Alaska Federation of Natives, mobilized quickly, but the announcement sparked frustrations over the limited time allowed for comment, only 60 days. Joe Nelson, co-chair of AFN, says the overflow crowd at last week's public hearing in Anchorage showed why more time is needed.
This is a big deal, you know. It's core to our identity as a people, our way of life.
Nelson says he is pleased with the decision to push back the deadline, that it demonstrates the administration is listening and willing to listen more. Joe Williams, the tribal president of Saxman, a predominantly Native community outside Ketchikan, says most Alaska tribes are small with limited staff. Williams says with so much to consider, tribes need more time to gather input.
If I don't get it done, it doesn't get done. That's just the way it is. And there are lots of tribes, federally recognized tribes, in Alaska, which there are 229 federally recognized tribes that are in the same situation that I am.
Safari Club supporters say the proposals aren't anti-subsistence or anti-rural priority, but focused on protecting wildlife and reining in what it calls federal overreach. Despite widespread disagreement over the issues, John Sturgeon, a longtime Safari Club policy advocate, agrees that the extension was needed. He says more time is needed to understand the group's proposals, which he says are misunderstood.
We are not trying to get rid of the Federal Subsistence Board or trying to get rid of subsistence. So hopefully a little more time, maybe we can get the word out a little bit better.
The Interior Department is also holding two statewide tribal consultation meetings next month to discuss the Federal Subsistence Review. These had already been scheduled. The Interior Department says its review is in the fact-finding stage. No changes will occur unless the Secretaries for the Interior and Agriculture Departments decide to set a rulemaking process in motion. This is KTOO.